almost crying eyes. "Wavy, what did you do to your brother?" Mama said.
"Nothing," Donald said.
He wasn't one of them. I pressed my ear to the floor in my room, but all I could hear was laughing and talking. Later someone came up the stairs, slow like Kellen, but not as big. "Donald."
"Mama says for me to sleep up here so Uncle Sean can have my bed," he said.
I fell asleep beside Donald and woke up to something that wasn't laughing.
"Yeah, well, I'm your brother, so I think that makes the situation special."
Was it Liam or Uncle Sean? Through the floor, it was hard to tell.
"Is that the whole reason you came here? Put on this big brother act?"
Liam.
"Baby, why couldn't we?"
Mama.
"Stay the fuck out of this, Val. It's not your money, so shut your trap." "It's just a loan. I guess I thought it mattered that I took care of Val after you got arrested," Sean said. "Don't throw that in my face," Liam said.
Then it was all shouting and the sound of things breaking and someone getting hit. I couldn't tell who it was until Mama screamed. Then it was Liam who said,
"You fucking whore,"
and Mama who said, "Don't, don't, please, Liam." Deputy Vogel told me to call him if I ever needed something. It's what they taught in school, too. They said the police were there to help you, but I don't think they knew what happened when the police came to your house. Cops ruin everything. They kick in the front door, throw people on the floor, and handcuff them. They break things and steal things. They lock you in a patrol car, make you spend all night in the police station wearing your nightgown, and then send you home with strangers. That's why I would never call Deputy Vogel, no matter how much Mama and Liam fought. I'd thrown away the paper with his number as soon as he gave it to me, because I remembered what happened the last time the police came to our house. Eventually, they stopped fighting and passed out. They always did. After everyone was quiet, I opened the window and looked down at the trellis Kellen climbed up on his birthday. The stair door was locked, and I had the only key, so no one could come upstairs while I was gone. Donald was safe. The trellis was like climbing down a ladder. And then I was free. I cut across the fields to the north, to a house I'd never visited. Like Liam's ranch, it wasn't a real farm. No chickens in the yard, and only a car in the barn. All the windows were open. I went along, tugging at the bottoms of the screens until I found one where the hook had come loose. Always check the fridge first. The best foods are kept there. Homemade things. Also apples. And pickles. Open the jar, take out two. Stuff one, then the other in my mouth. Tangy and sweet on my tongue. Fried chicken, salty and firm. Nibble the wing down to bone and slip it into my pocket to throw away later. Something smooth in a bowl, but hard to tell with no light. Dip a finger in and lick it. Vanilla pudding. Chocolate was better, but vanilla was good. Eating was most important, but once it was done, I looked at the things people think they own. I didn't take things very often, but I liked to move them. Car keys, purses, glasses, one shoe out of a pair. The living room smelled like flowers and powder. There was a piano with pictures on top and a candy dish on the coffee table. I lifted the lid and took a piece. Licorice. I put it back and lowered the lid. It made a tiny ching sound, but nothing worse.
"Lolene? Is that you?"
I jerked my hand away from the candy dish and took two quick steps back. In the shadows, a woman was sitting in a chair. She had white hair in the moonlight, like Grandma.
"Do you want candy? Ma's not here to catch us. We can eat all the candy we want."
I took another step back.
"Why won't you talk to me, Lolene?"
Another step and my shoulder knocked against the piano. A picture fell over.
"Do you want me to play the piano? Ma says I play almost as well as you." "Almost."
I ran, straight through the kitchen to the back door. Behind me, the woman called,
"Lolene, come back!"
When I got home, I found Cassiopeia and Cepheus and Ursa Major drawn in the gravel at the bottom of the drive, where Kellen had waited for me. He tried to draw Orion, too,
but missed two stars. I crawled back up the trellis to my room where Donald was asleep. Safe. In the morning, when I went downstairs to get breakfast for him, Mama and Liam were in bed naked. Uncle Sean was on the couch with a needle on the floor next to him. I picked it up and laid it on the coffee table. Safe.
8. Butch. April 1982. If anybody wanted to know why that kid never talked, I could have told them. That's what happens when your mom grabs you by the hair, clamps her hand over your mouth, and gives you a good shake while screaming in your face, "Don't you ever talk to people. You don't talk to anyone." That's what Val did to Wavy when she was about 3 years old. I don't know what she thought a 3-year-old could tell anyone, but I guess Wavy played in the sandbox with the neighbor's kids and the neighbor said something that made Liam nervous. More likely, the neighbor noticed people going in and out of the house all hours of the day and night. Not everybody is as stupid as Liam thinks they are. Liam and I go way back, and I owed him for keeping my name out of it when he got arrested. But watching Val rattle that kid's brain was the end of the line for me. Never mind how long we'd been in business together. I was ready to knock that crazy bitch on her ass. I didn't have to, because Liam grabbed Val's arm and said, "That's enough, baby." I never heard another peep out of that little girl. Years later, she warmed up to Jesse Joe Kellen. He was one of the local yokels we hired when we moved the operation to Powell. Not much more than a kid when Liam hired him. He was a big thug with a face like a plank. Always looked half-stoned, even though he wasn't, and didn't hardly open his mouth when he talked. Sometimes Kellen brought Wavy around the lab barracks when he played poker or dominoes with us. She'd hang around watching the game and bring us beers, like a little waitress. Kellen and her, they were cute together. She'd lean on his shoulder, look at his hand, count his chips. Him being so much bigger, it was funny how he acted with her. He talked to her like she was an adult. She always whispered in his ear so you got the idea they were having a conversation. I don't know what she ever said to him. One night, Kellen got up in the middle of a hand and said, "I'm going to go up to the house for some beer." "Let's just finish this hand," Vic said. "She'll play for me." Kellen gave his cards to Wavy and started up the hill toward the trailers. We laughed, but she got up in his chair, took her next card, and folded. Scott won that hand, and when he went to deal, he skipped Wavy. "What, Scott? You don't like taking money from kids?" I said. So he dealt her in. She lost $50 on that hand, but she won the next one. Kellen had been down by almost $200, but now he was up again. The next few hands, she won more than she lost. Her dealing left a lot to be desired since she had a hard time shuffling, but at least you knew she wasn't cheating. Kellen came back with beer about the time Scott and Vic decided to show her how the big boys played. It pissed them off that she'd managed to win some money, so they upped the ante and put down bigger bets. Even though it was his money, Kellen stood back and watched her play. Didn't tell her what to do. A couple hands in, Wavy apparently got some cards she liked, because she kept raising. Next thing you know, there was almost $5,000 on the table, and that was too rich for Vic. Seeing she'd raised almost everything she had in front of her, Kellen reached into his pocket and handed her a roll of bills, big enough she could barely close her hand around it. All business, Wavy snapped the rubber band off and started counting out $100 bills. "You do understand that's real money, little girl? This ain't Monopoly." Scott grinned and raised another $200. Wavy slid the last of her chips out to see him, and then the pile of cash she'd made, $1,000, raised him. Scott looked down at the chips he had left and the roll of bills she had left. Took him a good minute before he folded. The kid had just taken us for more than a grand apiece. She went to pitch her cards in, but Scott slapped his hand on them. "Hey, you didn't pay to see," Kellen said. "Come on, this isn't Vegas. Just a friendly poker game, right?" I was curious. Kellen looked at Wavy and she shrugged. Scott flipped her cards over, pair of fours. We busted up laughing, Vic clutching his sides and sobbing. "You do understand that's real money, little girl." Kellen laughed so hard he laid down on the floor next to Wavy's chair and cried. Scott, he about cried for real. Wavy watched us with this little smile on her face. She had a hell of a poker face. Laying there like a beached whale, so weak from laughing he couldn't get up, Kellen said, "Wavy, tomorrow we're going into town and buy you anything you want. Anything at all. Giggling behind her hand, she put her foot on his chest and nudged him. He took a hold of her leg and said, First thing, I'm buying you some new boots. You got holes in these from too much walking. Right up until that moment, it was sweet and funny. Odd couple that they were. They had a real connection. Then he tugged her boot off and kissed the bottom of her bare foot. I could see him doing that kind of thing to his own kid. But she wasn't. She was somebody else's little girl.
9. Wavy. July 1982. I waited by the porch to Sandy's trailer where the old gray cat lived. At night, the big yellow light over the garage cast shadows into my hiding place. People walked by and didn't even notice me crouched there. Dee and Lance left, probably going to the barracks to fuck. Sandy sat on the porch smoking and crying, talking to herself. I don't know why I put up with it. When Butch came, she went inside with him. Danny left in the charger and brought back beer. While he carried a case to the lab barracks, I snuck out of my hiding place and stole 2 cans. When Danny came back, he looked at the torn open case in the trunk and yelled, That's not funny, you assholes. Don't be poaching, brewskis. I started to think Kellen wouldn't come, or that he wouldn't be alone. The night he brought the snake tattoo girl on his bike, I did something reckless. I went into the trailer to get him. After that, he came to me on his own, so it had been worth the risk. I sat down on a cinder block and slipped my boots off to bury my toes in the cool silt under the porch. I listened for the panhead, but it never came. Finally, Old Man Kutchin's truck pulled into the yard, groaning as Kellen stepped out. He jingled his keys as he walked across the yard, clouds of dust kicking up around his boots. Only when he put his foot on the bottom step did I climb over the railing. Step out sooner and someone else might see me. Kellen walked across the deck, making the floorboards thump. From inside, Butch called, Fee-fi-fo-fum. Sandy giggled. Careful to stay to the side of the front window, I stepped out of the shadows. Sometimes Kellen had business and couldn't come with me, but tonight he was waiting for me to step into the light.
There you are. I was up to the house looking for you, but the Corvette was there, so I didn't go in, he said.
Uncle Sean was there all the time now.
Fee-fi-fo-no,
Butch called from inside the trailer. Hearing that, I hurried back to my hiding place. Kellen came down the stairs while I put my boots on. When he walked around the porch, I picked up the quilt and the cans of beer and followed him across the yard, going away from the sound of Butch and Sandy.
Is that Kellen? Sandy said.
I thought so, but there's nobody out here.
In the meadow, I had Kellen all to myself. He smelled good. Sweat and motorcycle and wintergreen. No stinking weed smoke. No perfume. No sadness. He smelled like love. Between the cottonwoods and the bluff, I spread out the quilt and offered him the cans of beer.
Dang, you even brought me beer. We need a better system. Some way for you to let me know where you are.
I liked that he wanted to know, but I also liked him not knowing. Sometimes waiting and being disappointed was good, to remind me he didn't belong to me. Nothing belonged to me. I shrugged and lay down on the quilt, which didn't smell like Grandma's house anymore, unless I closed my eyes and concentrated.
How are these new boots treating you? He said as he pulled them off.
He bought me new ones every year to start school. This was the 6th pair, to get me ready for high school in August. 7th grade was at the old middle school, the last year before they closed it. For 8th grade, I would be going to the new high school in Belton County, which was an hour each way on the bus.
You're not riding no 2 goddamn hours on the bus. I'm taking you, Kellen said.
He didn't care that it was farther. The boots for 8th grade had to be bought early, because I not only wore out the old ones, but outgrew them too. I nodded but didn't open my eyes to test an idea. If I kept my eyes closed, Would it be easier to send Kellen a message? I waited, but nothing happened, except that he went on talking while he took his boots off.
You know, I still got a whole lot of poker money burning a hole in my pocket.
Yours. I squinted harder, making stars sparkle inside my eyelids.
Only what I started with is mine. You won the rest. Shit, Scott isn't gonna live that down for a long time.
Smiling made it harder to send my message, but I liked winning and having Kellen kiss my foot. I crept my toes across the quilt to find Kellen's feet, which were hard as hooves. I went without socks when I forgot to do laundry, but he didn't own any socks. Still, I liked to pat his feet with mine, touch his hands with mine, rub my cheek against his. I liked how we were different, but the same. Lying back beside me, he spread his arm out to make me a pillow.
You didn't go swimming tonight?
He said. Before, with Donald.
That's nice. Is he in bed now?
I nodded and wiggled closer so I could press my face into his armpit. Sweaty, but clean.
You need to quit squirming and lay still,
he said. He was ticklish. I swallowed a giggle and stayed where I was to tease him. He always wanted me to say the stars, and if I didn't do it soon enough, he got impatient.
Ursa Mage.
I poked a finger into his side to stop him, and he laughed.
What? Not Ursa Major?
We waited, trying to trick each other, the kind of trick I liked.
Orion?
He said. No.
No? Oh, right. We won't see him until October. I guess that means I can keep wearing his belt until then.
I put my hand over his mouth to make him be quiet. The message I was trying to send was kiss me. He did kiss my hand before I took it away, but that wasn't what I wanted.
I promise I'll be good, he said.
Wiggling around to get comfortable, I put my head back on his arm. Then I looked up at the sky and found my place. Looking at the stars was like opening a familiar book. I made him wait a little longer since he didn't pay attention to my message. He must have gotten it late, because after a minute, he kissed my hair. When I turned my face to him, he kissed my lips, too. Cassiopeia, I said. 10.
Kellen. Waking up in the meadow was Wavy's favorite thing. She was more likely to talk first thing in the morning, too. I might get a whole dozen words out of her before the sun came up. I might even get the three I liked best. Me? I loved falling asleep in the meadow. The hay rustling around us. The stars overhead. Owls in the cottonwoods. Wavy curled up next to me so we were like two animals bedded down in the grass. That night, I was glad I skipped the beers. I remembered things better when I was sober, like Wavy's cheek stuck to my arm with sweat, and the wind ruffling her hair against my neck. I kissed her hand and pressed it over my heart. She said, already half asleep. The car drove down the road to the south, going too fast. After it passed, crickets filled up the quiet. A while later, another car came down the road, scattering gravel. I was just about asleep when a squealing thud jerked me wide awake. I sat up and Wavy woke up with a whimper, clutching at me. The car engine clunked and died. Somebody just wrecked up on the road. I'm gonna walk over and check it out, I said. I wanted Wavy to stay there, but when I pulled on my boots, she did the same. We struck out across the meadow toward the road, and when we came over the rise, I could see headlights off to the southwest. The road curved there with a fork to the north for a service road to the stock tank and windmill. There was a cattle guard across the ditch between iron gateposts. Car must have took the curve too fast. When Wavy broke into a run, I knew she'd figured it out, same as me. Two cars driving away from the farmhouse in the middle of the night. One was probably Val. Cutting through the hay, Wavy left me behind. When I got to the ditch, the passenger side headlight blinded me, skewing up at the wrong angle. I tripped over something and landed hard, gravel digging into my elbow. I hauled myself back up and ran like I hadn't since I played football in high school. One of the gateposts had cut through the car's hood, ruptured the radiator, and rammed the engine right into the front seat. There was antifreeze and gas pouring onto the road, turning it to mud. The driver's side was down into the ditch, and with the engine in the way, I couldn't see any way to get to Val. She was pinned behind the wheel and covered in blood. Dead for all I knew. For all I cared, really. Except I didn't want Wavy to see that. Wavy jerked open the rear passenger door, getting ready to crawl into the back seat before I caught her. She tried to pry my hand off her arm, so I grabbed her around the waist and tossed her over my shoulder. Even with her kicking and pounding on me, I didn't dare let go of her. Headed down the road toward the ranch with the headlights at my back, I saw what I'd tripped over coming out of the meadow. Donald, laying face down in the ditch. I set Wavy down, but when she saw her brother, she went crazy trying to get to him, so I had to drag her back. "Don't, Wavy, don't! You can't move him! You can't!" She dug her nails into my arm where I had her around the waist, but she stopped fighting. "If he's hurt, his back or his neck, you can't move him, okay? Promise." She nodded, and when I let go of her, she crawled to Donald and touched his hand. I would have checked for a pulse, but it didn't matter. If Donald was alive, we needed to get help. If Donald was dead, we needed to get help. "You're faster than me, Wavy. You gotta run and get help." She stood up and looked west down the road, then east, trying to decide which was closer. "Go down to the ranch and tell them what happened. Run as fast as you can," I said. I wanted that to be the right thing. She ran west, toward the farmhouse. She was going to call 911. The day I wrecked, I sent her to call Liam, because you don't call 911 if you wreck your bike a mile from a 4,000-square-foot metal barn full of meth-making equipment. But when your little brother's lying in a ditch, maybe with a broken neck, things like that don't matter. I got down on my hands and knees in the road next to Donald. I put my ear as close to his cheek as I could and held my breath. So soft, I almost couldn't hear it over the wind and the hay. Donald breathed in and out. In and out. Whatever happened, Wavy made the right choice.
11. D.
"Thank God we weren't cooking tonight," D said. The cops had been less than a mile from the barn. If Butch had been cooking, the cops would have smelled it, but they didn't. And nobody got killed. The cops said getting thrown out of the car probably saved Donald's life. All he ended up with was a concussion and a broken arm. If he'd had on his seatbelt, the engine would have crushed him. The other good thing was that when the ambulance came, the only person the cops talked to was Kellen. He kept them away from the trailers. Liam freaked out anyway. Of course he loved Val, she was his wife, but listening to him cry and carry on pissed Dee off. "She'll be fine," Dee said as they drove to the hospital in Garinger. She'd smoked too much crystal trying to get herself jump-started. So had Liam, because he couldn't stop talking. "This whole deal is my fault. If I were living at the farmhouse, taking care of her like I promised, this wouldn't have happened. I've got to fix this. I've got to make this right."
"It's gonna be okay, baby."
Dee kept saying that, because if something got fixed, it might fix her out of the picture. At the hospital, there wasn't enough crank in the world to make Val look okay. They glimpsed her through a window, lying in a bed with tubes running in and out. "I'm her husband," Liam said, so they let him into the room for a minute. Dee got in with a lie.
"I'm her sister."
Val was fucked up, a Frankenstein monster with stitches running across her forehead. Liam cried for a good 10 minutes after he saw Val. Dee held him, relieved. Yes, he loved Val, and he had the hots for Sandy. But Dee was there for him when there was a problem. He needed her. People came and went all day. Sandy, Scott, Vic, Butch, Lance, Ricky. In the evening, while Liam was in the bathroom topping himself up, Kellen showed up with Wavy. They looked rough around the edges, but at least they hadn't been at the hospital all day, unlike Dee, who felt like someone had run a cheese grater over her nerves. When Liam saw Kellen talking with Butch, he headed right for them and bailed into Kellen. "What the hell happened?" Liam said. "Like I was telling Butch, I was out in the meadow and heard the crash. I don't know what happened, except Val went off the road and hit that cattle gate. I'm sorry the cops came out, but it looked really bad. That's why I called 911, and the cops didn't go near the ranch." "I mean, what happened? Why was Val out driving?" "I don't know," Kellen said. How can you not know? You were at the house, weren't you? No, I was in the meadow. Don't lie to me, you son of a bitch.
Liam jabbed his finger into Kellen's chest. It scared Dee when Liam got wild-eyed like that. As big as Kellen was, Liam would take him on when he got in that state.
I wasn't at the house.
Kellen's voice was too soft for Liam to hear when he got crazy.
I think Sean. You think I don't know how you're always hanging around, trying to insinuate yourself into her bed? It's not like that. I never. You think she'd ever have a use for some slob like you? What? You think she's gonna divorce me and marry you?
What are you talking about? Kellen said.
Liam, don't.
Butch put a hand on his arm, but Liam shoved it away.
I ought to fucking kill you for coming around my wife even thinking that kind of shit.
Dee held her breath, waiting for it to all blow up. Kellen took a step back and brought his hands up, ready to field the punch. The nurse at the night station stood up and reached for the phone. God, if she called security, they'd have a problem. Liam couldn't back down from a fight when he was tweaking, especially if cops were involved.
Look, Butch said, I don't know what's going on in your head, Liam, but you need to stop and look around. Kellen isn't here for some... You don't know, man. This fucking asshole's been going around my house every goddamn day, acting like he lives there. He brought Wavy to see her mother and her little brother. That's why he's here.
Butch put his hand on Liam's arm again and turned him toward Wavy, who stood there watching in that eerie way she had, like the little girls from The Shining.
I just brought Wavy to visit. I didn't mean to cause trouble.
Kellen said.
You didn't. You're okay,
Butch said.
Right, Liam? He's okay. He's okay. Yeah. I'm sorry, Kellen. I'm just all turned inside out. It's all right. I'm gonna take Wavy home now.
Dee, you better go spend the night with her, Butch said. Dee glared at him, like how she was spending the night in an empty house with that creepy little girl while Liam was with Val.
Wavy doesn't even talk to Dee. I'll go and sleep on the couch,
Kellen said. Butch seemed like he might keep arguing, but Kellen was already turning away. When he put his hand out to Wavy, she took it.
Kellen.
Riding down in the elevator to the parking garage, Wavy leaned against the opposite wall, staring at nothing. When the doors opened at the second-level parking, she walked ahead of me to where the truck was parked.
Where do you want to go? I said. You want to stay down at the ranch with Sandy?
Wavy turned around and took a few steps backward so we could look at each other. She pointed at me.
You want to stay with me? Or you want me to stay with you?
She nodded. I knew she was going to say that. And I knew I wouldn't sleep on the couch. Unlike everybody else, me and Wavy had already been into the farmhouse and seen what Val did before she wrecked. Broken dishes and food all over the kitchen floor. In the living room, the coffee table was split in two like somebody had jumped on it. One of the couch legs was busted off and the cushions were cut open. Lying in the middle of that mess was a used syringe and a pair of lacy panties. Val even went into Wavy and Donald's rooms, ripped the sheets off the beds, broke toys, and tore up library books. Driving out to the farmhouse, we didn't talk about what to do. I parked the truck in the drive and we walked down into the meadow. The quilt was right where we left it, no worse for having spent the day out in the hayfield. The two cans of beer were warm, but I cracked one and drank it. Wavy said all the stars, but we didn't make a game of it. After she fell asleep, I was still awake, listening to the quiet, thinking about what we'd have to do in the morning. While Wavy swept and mopped, I figured I'd haul the things Val had destroyed out to the trash barrel and burn them. I kept thinking about that, picturing what needed to be done, because that was as far as I could think. After we cleaned up the house, I didn't know what we'd do next.
12. Donald. August 1982. I didn't remember Mama and me having our wreck, but I remembered Mama and Uncle Sean fighting, just like she does with Daddy, screaming and hitting and breaking stuff. I hate you, Mama kept saying.
Where is it? Where the fuck is it?
Uncle Sean yelled. He went stomping all around the house, tearing things up, even worse than Mama does when she's mad. After he left, Mama said, "I'll show him." I was hiding under the bed, but she came and dragged me out and said, "Put your fucking shoes on. We're leaving." Then I guess we went for a ride and had our wreck, but I didn't remember that. I got a cool cast on my arm and everybody signed it. For a while, it was just Wavy and Kellen and me at the farmhouse. And I liked that. Wavy was happier, and when Kellen and me made jokes at dinner, she laughed out loud. I wanted us all to sleep together, but Kellen was too big, so he slept in Wavy's bed and she slept with me. Mostly. Then Mama got to leave the hospital and Daddy said,
"I want you to come live with me."
I thought that would be cool because there were motorcycles and puppies and firecrackers down at the trailers. Maybe I could get a bike, too. Plus, Wavy made me eat good-for-me stuff, oatmeal and green beans. At Daddy's house, Sandy let me eat Pop-Tarts and frozen pizzas. Also, Mama scared me. She was different people.
"Wait,"
Wavy said. Her rule was, don't talk to Mama until she talks to you. Wait until you know which Mama she's going to be. If Mama said, "Oh God, I'm so alone," it was okay for me to hug her. If Mama said, "Worthless motherfucker, I'll show him," you better watch out. Even Kellen didn't like to come in the house when she was like that, and he was lots bigger than Daddy. Before Mama came home from the hospital, Sandy helped me pack my stuff. We packed Wavy's clothes, too, while she sat on the bed, touching her quilt.
"We can take the quilt with us, honey."
Sandy stuck her hand out, getting ready to do something stupid. Only Kellen and me got to touch Wavy, and she could hit hard. Boy, I didn't want to see that. "Don't touch her," I said.
"What?"
Sandy was kind of stoned, so she was being silly. Wavy stood up, and Sandy started to fold her quilt.
"No,"
Wavy said. When Sandy didn't stop, Wavy said it loud. "No!"
"You don't want to take your quilt?"
"It's not her quilt," I said. Grandma, who I didn't remember, made the quilt for Wavy, but I knew the rule. Nothing belongs to you. I knew the rule, but I didn't like it. My stuff was mine, like the pocket knife Uncle Sean gave me. If somebody tried to take it, I'd sock them. Sandy put the quilt back on the bed and took the other stuff to the car. First thing, when we got down the hill, I showed Wavy the puppies in the garage. It was okay for animals to touch her. She petted them and let them crawl on her lap. I wanted to light firecrackers, but it was getting hot outside, so I said, "Let's go watch TV." That was something else we didn't have at the farmhouse. Wavy had her little TV with rabbit ears, but Sandy's trailer had satellite. Only when we went inside, Daddy and Kellen and Butch were there.
"Hey, come here, kiddo,"
Daddy said. Then he saw Wavy. He yelled,
"Sandy! Sandy!"
until she came. She must have been in the shower, because she had a towel on her head.
"What the fuck is she doing here?"
Sometimes I thought Daddy couldn't see Wavy, but he pointed at her.
"But you said you wanted the kids to move down here. You..."
"I said the kid. Donald. Not her."
"You... what do you want me to do?"
Sandy said.
"Get her out of here. Take her back up to the farmhouse." "I'll take her," Kellen said.
After Wavy left, I didn't want it to be fun living at Daddy's. It wasn't fair if I had fun and she didn't. But there were puppies. And then Daddy bought me a motorbike and taught me how to ride it. Anyways, Wavy didn't really want to live there, and I still got to see her. Sometimes she came with Kellen, and sometimes she snuck in to see me. Some mornings, before anybody else woke up, I went across the meadow to the farmhouse. That was the best. 13. Kellen.
Plenty of times I'd wanted to beat the crap out of Liam, but never as bad as I did when he told Wavy to get out. Her whole face went blank and stayed that way until we walked out to the front drive. She scowled when she saw the willies. "The bike's at the shop," I said. "I got tired of it being dinged up. We'll have to ride in the truck for a while." Wavy shuffled her feet, but she let me take her hand and help her up into the truck. You know this is old man Kuchin's truck. Good truck. Plus it's the same age as his son. He thinks that's good luck. He sold this to me a couple years ago, when his grandkid was born, and bought himself that new Ford. He's still proud of this Willys, though. Says it's never broke down on him.
She knew all about the truck. I was only trying to fill up the quiet.
You wouldn't want to live down at the trailers anyway. It's noisy and they smoke. Makes the place stink. You wouldn't like that. When I turned to go up the road to the farmhouse, she said,
No.
I couldn't blame her for not wanting to go up there. Val laid up in bed with a nurse there, some stranger. I turned around and drove the route we took around the lake on the bike, but it wasn't the same in the truck. I was sorry I'd sold the Barracuda, even though I made good money on it. Piss poor timing on my part. Once we reached the Powell city limits, there were only two options, my house or the shop. Is there somewhere you want to go, Wavy? After a second, she pointed at me. Yeah, we can go to my house.
Live with you,
she said. You can't live with me. She pretty much had been while Val was in the hospital. That had to end now. I didn't know what else to say, so I drove to my place and pulled into the carport. Wavy sagged back in her seat, staring out the windshield at the faded asbestos siding on the garage. She looked so small and tired, like my ma before she died. It's not me, Wavy. Other people wouldn't like you living with me, since I'm not your family. Maybe you could go live with your aunt. They're your family. It made a kind of sense, but that was about the last thing I wanted. Tulsa was a long drive, and the way her aunt looked at me, it wasn't like I'd be able to visit Wavy there. But maybe things would be better for her without me. Maybe she could have a regular life with good people. Well, what if we... I racked my brain trying to figure out something. There was the spare bedroom. I could put the weight bench out in the garage, get a bed in there. Except it didn't fix the real problem, her living with me.
Get married, she said.
Had she heard what Liam said at the hospital? Man, I hope she didn't believe that crap about me messing around with Val. If who got married, I said. She pointed at me, and, in that slow way she had, brought her finger back to her chest. I couldn't help it. I laughed. Not because I thought it was funny, but because I was shocked. She looked right through me, like I wasn't there. She wasn't joking, and I wished I could take it back. I'm not laughing at you, sweetheart. You surprised me is all. I didn't expect you to say that. She didn't make a sound. She was going to make me answer her. You know we can't get married.
Why?
I don't think Liam would like that. She shrugged, because it was a stupid reason. Liam had kicked her out.
I'm a good wife, she said.
I know you'd be a good wife. I like your cooking, and you clean the house, and you know how to keep the books. I mean, if it was just about that, or about me wanting to be with you, sure. But you're too young to get married. Staying out at the farmhouse with Wavy and Donald, it was something near to playing house. Except Wavy didn't play at things. Here's the thing. In a couple of weeks, you start school, right? Leave the house by 7 when Val's still asleep. After school, you can go to my house or down to the shop. Stay there till it's time to close. Then we can have dinner, you can do your homework, watch TV, and I'll take you up to the farmhouse before bed. Wavy didn't answer. No nod. No shrug. Nothing. Hey, I said. Hey. For the first time ever, I reached over and touched her hair without waiting for some kind of invitation. Even that didn't get me a reaction. She didn't lean into me and she didn't push me away. There had to be something to make my offer stick, and sitting there looking at the back door of my house, I thought of it. I started the truck and headed to the hardware store. Got there just before it closed. I came around to Wavy's side and almost spilled her on the pavement because of the way she was leaning up against the door. Come on, we gotta get something, I said. She came after me, dragging the heels of her new boots. While I went looking for a clerk, she stood in the store's main aisle, staring through a display of car wax. When I came back, she was still doing that. I had the feeling again like I'd come up on a wild animal. Only instead of a fawn, she was like a fox kid I saw once, hit by the side of the road. On its feet, but dying. The key in my palm was hot off the grinder, smelled like graphite. This is for you, so you can go to my place anytime you want, whether I'm there or not. Only other person got a key to my house is old man Kutchin, but that's so, you know, if something ever happened to me. I held the key out to Wavy, but she just looked at it. If she wouldn't take it, I figured that would mean she was done with me. I wasn't ready to reach that point, so I kept talking. I bought that house 3 years ago. Mr. Kutchin co-signed for me on the loan. If I can do a few more deals like with the Barracuda, and with the extra money coming from Liam, I figure it'll be paid off in 2 years. It's nothing fancy, but it's my house, where I don't gotta put up with nobody's bullshit. That's why I'm giving you this, so it can be your house, too, so you can have a place to go. Even if you can't live with me, that other bedroom's for you. I'm gonna clean it out, so it'll be your place. Finally, she reached for the key, squeezed it tight in her fist, and then dropped it down in her boot. Leaving the hardware store, I asked her where she wanted to go.
Home,
she said. I wish that wasn't the farmhouse, but it was. When we got there, a strange car was parked in the drive, a 72 Buick wagon. The nurse. I turned off the engine, but before I could open my door, Wavy pulled the keys out of my hand and stuck them back in the ignition. You don't want me to come in? I said. She shook her head. I know you're mad, but will you at least give me a kiss? I said. She opened the door, got out, and walked up the porch steps without looking back. Sitting there, trying to decide what to do, I saw her answer. She'd written liar in the dust on the Willie's dashboard. I felt like I'd been kicked in the stomach. Not like she'd kicked me, but like life had. Kicked her, too, while it was at it. Part 3 1. Patty. September 1982. There had been several home nursing assignments where Patty felt she was a member of the family. But the Quinns was the first assignment that made her feel like a patient in the asylum. When she got to the house, the only person there besides the patient was Casey, the day nurse.
Nobody's been here. When the ambulance and I got here with Mrs. Quinn, the back door was unlocked, Casey said. She was one of those perky up-and-at-'em people who harangued injured patients out of bed and into their physical therapy. The house was cleaner than Patty had expected. The outside hadn't been painted in years, but the floors had been mopped and the bathroom smelled of bleach. There were fresh sheets on the bed and clean dishes in the cupboard. She knew there were children, a little boy who had been injured in the rack and an older girl, but there was no sign of them. Mrs. Quinn's bedroom was in the front, off the parlor. The other bedroom was off the dining room. There was a full-sized bed in there. No toys or children's clothes. Just some crayon marks on the wall behind the bed. After she gave Mrs. Quinn her next dose of pain medication, Patty ventured up the narrow attic stairs. There she found a bed with a handmade quilt on it. Only the glow in the dark stars on the ceiling suggested it was a child's room. It was dark when a vehicle pulled up outside. After a few minutes, the back door opened and Patty got to the kitchen just as a blonde girl came in and slammed the door.
Hi. I'm Patty. I'm the night nurse who's here to take care of your mommy. What's your name? The girl took 2 cautious steps into the kitchen.
It's okay, honey. Did your daddy tell you that a nurse was coming? I'm here to make sure she takes her medication and gets better.
The girl moved around the other side of the table, and it dawned on Patty that she was planning to dash past her. The back door opened again, and a large man with greasy black hair came in. He looked at Patty for an instant before his gaze went to the girl, who turned and ran up the stairs.
Wavy, goddammit, Wavy!
The man started after her, yelling,
You can't just say something like that. What did I lie to you about?
He thundered up the stairs, and Patty heard his footsteps and his voice overhead, but nothing from the girl. They were up there for nearly 2 hours, long past what should have been the girl's bedtime. Several times Patty considered going up to check on them, but each time she convinced herself it was better to wait. Eventually the man stomped down the stairs slowly. He seemed startled to find Patty sitting at the kitchen table with a cup of coffee in front of her.
She didn't let it bother her. Sometimes she had to fend for herself. Standing up, she held out her hand. "Hello, I'm Patty Bruce, the night nurse that Mr. Quinn hired to take care of his wife."
"Sorry about the ruckus. I hope we didn't wake her up."
He shook her hand.
"I'm Jessie Jo Kellen. I'm a friend of the family."
"Is that Mrs. Quinn's daughter?"
"Yeah, that's Wavy. She's a little upset."
It's not unusual. Having a parent badly injured can be very troubling for children. They're not used to seeing their parents helpless. He nodded and absently brought a hand to his hair to smooth down a rooster tail that stuck up on his crown.
"I'm real sorry for barging in here. Is there anything you need? I'll be back in the morning to get Wavy so I can bring you whatever groceries you need. And Wavy did the laundry, so there's clean towels."
"Do you know when Mr. Quinn is coming?"
"Well, he don't actually live here. He lives down the hill. You know where you pass that other road where there's a couple trailers?"
"Am I to understand that Wavy will be here alone tonight?"
"Not if you're here," he said.
"I don't say this to be rude, but my duties don't include childcare."
Mr. Kellen laughed. "Wavy don't need a babysitter. She'll get herself to bed, get her own breakfast. It'd be best if you didn't bother her."
"Bother her?"
"Just pretend she's not here. If you hear her get up in the middle of the night, don't come checking on her. She likes to be left alone."
Patty was so confused, she couldn't think of anything to say. She pushed her glasses up on her head and rubbed her eyes, feeling a headache coming on. While she was doing that, Mr. Kellen walked out the kitchen door. She thought of going after him, but it seemed pointless. After she checked on Mrs. Quinn at midnight, Patty went into the living room and lay down on what looked like a new sofa. She must have dozed because she woke to the sound of someone in the kitchen. Looking into Mrs. Quinn's room, Patty found her still asleep, or as close to sleep as the pain medication brought her. For a moment, a light flashed in the kitchen, the fridge being opened and closed, but otherwise it was all darkness. Then a cupboard opened and a dish clinked softly on the countertop. Was the girl eating? At that hour? In the dark? Or was she sleepwalking? Standing on the other side of the swing door, Patty was about to say the girl's name when she remembered Mr. Kellen's cryptic warning. "If you hear her get up in the middle of the night, don't come checking on her." Wasn't there a fairy tale with a warning like that? Beauty and the Beast? Blackbeard? After a few minutes, the girl went back up the stairs and solved Patty's dilemma. In the morning, as Casey was arriving, the girl came downstairs already dressed. Casey said, "So, this must be Wavy. Did you two meet last night?" "After a fashion, we did," Patty said. From outside came the sound of a car horn. Again, Wavy slipped around the table, maneuvering her escape, and Casey and Patty followed her to the kitchen door. An old truck sat in the drive. Mr. Kellen rolled down the window and called,
"I'm sorry. The bike's gonna take a while, okay?"
Wavy stomped down the stairs and got into the truck. "Odd little girl," Casey said.
"You have no idea."
Patty told her everything, even though it put her an hour over her shift. She needed to compare notes with someone, and talking with Casey every day at least convinced her that she wasn't the only one who thought the family was strange. According to Casey, there wasn't much to know about the day shift. Mrs. Quinn slept most of the first 2 weeks, and never said anything, except to complain about the pain she was in, and to ask where her husband and her children were.
"What am I supposed to tell her?
I haven't seen her husband since he hired me. I've never seen her son, and her daughter comes home late every night with some big biker."
"And she doesn't spend the whole night here either," Patty offered.
"Are you serious?"
"I'm sure she sneaks out at night."
"What is she, 13, and she sneaks out at night?" Casey said.
"A few times, she hasn't come home at all."
"Have you told anyone?"
"Well,
I told Mrs. Quinn. She said, she's probably with Kellen. I suppose that's good enough for her."
"Good grief.
Have you thought about talking to Marjorie?"
Marjorie was their supervisor, and the suggestion irked Patty. Casey was eager for Patty to go to Marjorie with it, but Casey wouldn't. That way, if the Quinns said, "How dare you accuse our dear family friend?" Patty would be the one who had made the accusation.
If Patty didn't report and then something improper was going on, Casey could always say, "Why didn't you tell someone?" "So, what else have you noticed?" Casey said. "Wavy sneaks into the kitchen at night and eats, but honestly, I've been known to do that." Casey laughed, and Patty was glad she hadn't said the other thing she couldn't stop thinking about. The night Kellen had gone up to Wavy's room and argued with her, there was one phrase she'd overheard.
"I do love you," he'd said, his voice rumbling through the floor. "I love you all the way."
Not the sort of thing a family friend says to a 13-year-old girl. Now it was too late to tell Casey, who would want to know why Patty hadn't mentioned it right away. 2. Wavy. The motorcycle was beautiful, the stars sprawling over the fenders and spinning out around the gas cap on a field of deep, shimmery blue, like August when the moon was dark. No matter how much he teased me, Kellen put the stars on the way they were supposed to be. Cassiopeia and Cepheus in the center, and the rest of them tumbling away on the sides. Squeezed under Kellen's thigh while he rode was Orion, the three stars of his belt glinting. Every star was a tiny scrap of silver foil sealed to the gas tank under clear enamel. Looking at it, my heart hurt so much I almost couldn't breathe. Not because the motorcycle was beautiful, but hoping it was for me and knowing it might not be. Nothing belonged to me, but the rule didn't keep me from wanting Kellen to be for me only. I put my hand on the tank and tried to smile, but there were too many hot things trapped in my mouth. Kellen smelled like the shop, so I knew he had just finished the bike. He had come straight to school to show it to me as soon as it was ready, and waited in the parking lot until I came out. "Do you like it?" he said. I nodded once to say, "Yes, it's beautiful." From the way he shifted on his feet, wanting to touch my hair but not doing it, I knew he thought my answer was small.
"I used that book you gave me to make sure I put them on right. Are they right?"
I nodded again.
"So you like it, but you're still mad at me?"
Resting his hand on the seat, he leaned over and breathed on me. I loved that. His breath was warm and wintergreen smelling. He needed me to speak, because his heart hurt too. I didn't want to be mean, but sometimes it was dangerous to open my mouth and let words out. Other times, my throat closed up so tight the words couldn't come out. Looking at the panhead, at all the work he did, the words trapped in my throat weren't nice ones. They were words to say, "I don't like it, if you're going to let girls with snake tattoos ride on it." I knew I was breaking the rule, but I laid my hand on the seat next to his. It was a new seat, tall and back for a passenger. "Me," I said.
"Yeah, that's your spot, Wavy. I love it when you ride with me. I'm sorry it took so long to paint, but that's... I don't even know how many coats of clear enamel. And I wanted it to be a surprise, but getting all those little stars right was a bitch without you to tell me where they go."
"Only me. I didn't care if it was against the rules."
"Only you?"
He straightened up and sunlight fell on my hair where he had shaded me.
"Oh. Oh. Come on, put your helmet on and let's ride this thing."
That was another thing I loved. The way he swung his leg over the bike, started it with one solid kick and settled his weight on it. But the bike wasn't for me. There would be other girls. Snake tattoo girls, perfume-wearing girls he loaned his jacket to. I wished the bike weren't so beautiful. I wished it were still primer gray, or green and yellow flames like the day he wrecked it. I wished it didn't feel so good to ride behind him with my arms around him. I didn't want to enjoy the way the wind spun around me and pulled at my dress. It soothed me, and I didn't want to be soothed. 3. Miss Humphreys. It had happened often enough in the last 40 years that Miss Humphreys had a well-rehearsed response. Because of the store's proximity to the county courthouse, once or twice a month, a scruffy-looking man stepped in off the street and said,
"I need to buy a wedding ring."
This one followed pattern. A big man in grease-stained jeans and engineer's boots. Ham-sized forearms covered in tattoos. He looked nervous, not quite making eye contact. Sometimes, as in this instance, the man had a child with him, perhaps a soon-to-be stepdaughter. She was too old and too blonde to be his natural child. Before they could get more than a few steps into the store, Miss Humphreys offered her warmest smile, one intended to reassure. Then she said, "You know, there's a nice little drugstore on 14th and Mohawk. They sell plain gold bands at a very reasonable price." She was never rude, but she considered it a kindness to dissuade people from embarrassing themselves.
"Not a band," the man said. "A real ring. A diamond ring."
"Well, we have a variety of engagement rings. In this case, I have some simple and elegant rings, starting at a quarter-carat weight."
"Come and look, sweetheart. I want you to pick it out."
The girl stepped up to the display, and in the bright lights meant to make the stones sparkle, she was not what Miss Humphreys had expected. Not a grubby girl, of the type who usually accompanied the scruffy-looking men. Her cheeks were scrubbed pink, and her hair clung to her scalp, not because it needed washing, but because it was so fine. She wore a pale blue dress with pin tucks down the front. Velasquez Infanta Margarita in motorcycle boots. Miss Humphreys hated cleaning fingerprints off the glass cases, but the girl didn't touch the display cabinet. She stood with her hands at her sides and peered in. "Or if you're looking for something unusual, my brother occasionally purchases estate jewelry. We have some lovely antique rings in this case." Stepping down the counter, the girl looked into that display. Her stepfather followed, watching her but not interfering. The scruffy men usually got uncomfortable by then, having glimpsed the occasional price tag, but he seemed more at ease now. Miss Humphreys took her cue from him and didn't say anything, but she recognized the moment the girl found something she liked. Her gaze sharpened and she leaned forward. Perhaps all women were born with that attraction to diamond rings, a magpie instinct. "Which one do you like?" Miss Humphreys said. There were a few lower-priced rings in the estate case, diamond chips in delicately scrolled 10-carat Victorian settings, more than a $20 gold band from the drugstore, but under $200. The girl's father leaned over her head to look in the case.
"I see which one. What are those called?" "Those ones that look like stars," he said.
"Star sapphires." She knew the ring, and it broke her heart that the girl had picked such a lovely ring for her mother, something her future father wouldn't be able to afford. Normally, at that point, Miss Humphreys indicated the price before opening the case. That got rid of the persistent ones who said, "That's a little more than I was looking to spend." The girl had been respectful, and the afternoon was quiet, so Miss Humphreys took the keys off her wrist and unlocked the display. "It's Victorian, late 19th century. The diamond is natural, slightly more than 1 carat, E in color with no inclusions visible to the naked eye, surrounded by 5 natural star sapphires, each a tenth of a carat." She said it all for the pleasure of saying it, aware that neither of them understood what it meant. When she placed the ring on the velvet mat, she was careful to flip the price tag with her pinky so that it lay exposed. The girl rose on her toes to look down at the ring. After a moment, she glanced up at the man.
"That one?" he said.
She nodded.
"That's the one we want, then. You can make it fit, right?"
"Yes, of course it can be sized. Do you know what size you'll need?"
"Whatever size she wears. I don't know how you measure that."
Only when the girl held out her hand did Miss Humphreys understand the ring was for her. To hide her shock, Miss Humphreys turned away and retrieved the sizing rings. She fumbled with them, not sure where to begin. Usually she started with the size 6. The average woman was somewhere near that, but for a child. She held out the size 4, but it swallowed the girl's finger. The size 3 was still loose. The 2, the 1, and the 3/4 remained, but they were problematic. "The dilemma here," said Miss Humphreys, is the width of the setting. I'll check with my brother, but I worry anything smaller than a 3 would require the setting to be curved to